지 이사조기다나와다 예리할
Entitled Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions, text number 24. Is it up on the board somewhere? Astoru hatus tasya. Nama karma chikirsaya. Tayos tu balavan indra. Adanam ubayasrayam Asto ruhatos tasya Nana karma chikirsaya Tayastu balavan indra Adanam ubayasrayam Hastoru hatus tasya. Jnana Karma Chikirsaya. Kayostu Balavan Indra. Adhanam Ubayasrayam. That was quite unique. Okay. Hasto.
Hasto.
The hands. Ruru Hatu. Manifested. Tasya. His. Na
na.
Various.
Karma.
Work. Chikir Saya.
Being so desirous.
Tayo, of them,
to,
however,
Balavan,
to give strength,
Indra,
the demigod in heaven, Adhanam,
activities of the hand,
Ubaya Asrayam, dependent on both the demigod and the hand. Translation. Thereafter, when the Supreme Person desired to perform varieties of work, the two hands in their controlling strength, and Indra, the demigod of heaven, became manifested, as also the acts dependent on both the hands and the demigod. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In every item, we can note with profit that the sense organs of the living entity are never independent at any stage. The Lord is known as the Lord of the senses, Rishikesha. Thus, the sense organs of the living entities are manifested by the will of the Lord, and each organ is controlled by a certain type of demigod. No one, therefore, can claim any proprietorship of the senses. The living entity is controlled by the senses, and the senses are controlled by the demigods, and the demigods are the servants of the Supreme Lord. That is the arrangement of the system of creation. The whole thing is controlled ultimately by the Supreme Lord, and there is no independence neither of the material nature or of the living entity. The illusion living entity who claims to be the Lord of his senses is under the clutches of the external energy of the Lord. As long as the living entity continues to be puffed up by his tiny existence, he is to be understood to be under the stringent control of the external energy of the Lord, and there is no question of liberation from the clutches of illusion, Maya. However much one may declare himself a liberated soul. Anagyantimirandasya ginajana salakaya chaksun militam yena tasmai shri gadave namaha nama om vishnu padaya krishna prasthaya bhutale srimakti bhakti vedanta swamiti namine namaste saraswati deve gaurvani pacharine nirvisesa sunyavadi paschatyade sitarine Vanchakopa, Tarubhischa, Kripa, Sindhu, Peepacha, Nititanam, Padre, Vyo, Vaishnavi, Vyo, Namaho, Namaha, Jai, Sri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Gadadara, Srivasati, Vor, Bhakta, Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Rama. There's one that when Srila Sanatana Goswami decided to do his bhajan on the gates of Manasi Ganga, he was writing at the time, so he had chosen Manasi Ganga to be his place for his bhajan, his writing. And he was there every night, but there was a problem. There were mosquitoes. And the mosquitoes were harassing. So Sanatana Goswami was becoming a little disturbed and distracted by these mosquitoes. So after many days, he decided, I'm going to leave this place and go somewhere else. Now, Manasi Ganga, right there by the entrance, there's also a temple of Lord Shiva called Chakaleshwara Mahadev. And so when Sanatana had decided that tomorrow I won't be back here, Shiva became a little concerned because Shiva was really happy that such a great personality was performing his bhajan right near his little mandir. So he disguised himself as a brahmana. And he came to Sanatana that same night and he said, my dear Sanatana, please do not concern yourself. I guarantee tomorrow there will be no mosquitoes here. And so Sanatana, okay. So then Shiva went to the demigod who's in charge of mosquitoes. It's mentioned here. Every god is in charge of something, or every aspect of material creation has a controlling feature, and the demigods are the sub-controllers. Ultimately, the Supreme Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is the sunam bonam of controller of all of the other controllers. And so he told the demigod who was in charge of mosquitoes, keep your mosquitoes away from Sanatana. And so that next night, when Sanatana came back, there was no mosquitoes. And people say, at least today, they say, in that same place, still there's no mosquitoes there. That's right at the entrance of Manasi Ganga. So this illustrates what is being emphasized in this purport, how ultimately all aspects of material energy, all the way from the tiniest living entity in the most insignificant body, or all the way up to Indra, who is actually a demigod, are also controlled by higher forces. And that control helps one to really understand where to place one's attention, because you know that you're controlled by the material energy, that means you're limited in whatever you can accomplish and whatever efforts you can make. And therefore, in one who is actually intelligent, well, I'll be going, how can I be free from control? Because it is explained that the living entity falls to the material world because of that anartha, that desire to control or be the controller. Therefore, Krishna facilitates that desire and manifests a place called the material world, while the living entity can act as the false tense of controller and try to control. And Prabhupada said everyone has some control. But if you get a toothache, then the dentist controls you. In other words, there's always some controller who is higher than whoever's got some control in this world. So everyone is somewhat limited in what they can perform, and the results of one's activities are never within the purview of one's efforts. One has to accept it according to the quality of that activity. And so that illustrates pretty much that one wants to be free from all control, one has to go to that energy, or accept that energy that is not within the three modes of material nature. Now, ultimately, it's the spiritual energy. And that is devotional service. So devotional service is the principle of freedom. But still, it's controlled by Krishna through his various energies. But that control allows the living entity to express himself completely and perfectly in its natural position of devotion to Krishna. Therefore, although it appears to be still within the realm of control, it is free, because in the spiritual realm, one is not limited. One is not limited. The spirit is never limited, and material is always limited. So one who takes shelter pure in devotional service goes under the supreme controller, who is completely free. And therefore the devotee is also free. Free in the sense that they're not encumbered by the restrictions coming under the influence of the three modes of material nature. So I've been requested to speak a little bit about some preaching in jails. It's a program that has been developed since the end of the 1980s. Mm-hmm. I can't really take credit for being the inaugurator of prison preaching. There was one devotee who actually was the inaugurator, and that was Prabhupada's disciple named Chandrasekhar. And he started it, and I got involved with him back in that same era, around the beginning of the 1990s. And so prison preaching generally means to connect people in these jails with Prabhupada's books. And that's what is the foundation for all of the transformation of these inmates, who are somewhat looking for a way out of their suffering condition. Somehow, if they come across Srila Prabhupada's books, then their whole life becomes transformed. There's many interesting, you might call them pastimes, I don't know if we could use that word, in jails, where there was one biker, really tough guy. He was a member of a motorcycle gang in California. And those gangs are quite violent, and so he wound up in jail after killing 8 people. So he's in jail for life. Somehow, he came across one of Srila Prabhupada's books, and then he became interested and started reading, and then there was some information about ISKCON prison ministry that he... And so he wrote to me, and I wrote back, and then we developed a relationship. I sent him Chaitanya Charitamrita, the big red volume, one volume. So he was reading that avariciously, just every day, just absorbed in that. After some time, he took initiation from Vaisheshika, who became his spiritual master. And he started to develop really saintly qualities. And one day he wrote me a letter explaining an experience that he had that astounded him. He was astounded by this experience that happened to him. Now he's quite he's powerful, very, very strong, and it's a person, to use a cliche, you don't mess with. But now he's in jail. So what they do is they allow the inmates with free time, and they go out in the yard and they run around, they do calisthenics, and they can associate with each other for a little while in that environment. And so while he was out there, one fellow inmate came up to him and said, "Are you Ben Baker?" That was his name. He said, "Yes." He said, "Well, you killed my best friend." So then he attacked him. He attacked Ben. Now, the man was no match for Ben Baker, who later became initiated as Balavan Nittai. Balavan, yeah. Rajeshika Prabhu gave him that name. And perfect name for him. And so he didn't do anything to harm the person. He simply grabbed him and put him down on the ground until the guards came. And then they took him away. And he wrote me a letter. He said, "Maharaj, I couldn't believe it. Somebody would have attacked me like that, I would have finished him off. But I didn't. I guess I got the mercy of Lord Nityananda." He was surprised. He wrote a long letter explaining how was it possible that I was able to act in that situation like that. So I said, "Well, you believe in Krishna consciousness, don't you? This is what it does. It changes the heart, it changes the activities." So yeah, so that was a nice experience. And that was a great transformation for a person like that. He was a person who lived a very, very rough and violent life for many, many years. Another interesting story, which is really illustrates the power of faith and the power of the holy name, is that we were writing to one young man in one jail, and I think it was in North Carolina. And the boy was quite new in Krishna consciousness. He was reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And I have to emphasize that point, is that Prabhupada's books is what transforms people. When they read these books, their whole, they just become so, they're amazed to read it, and they just want to hear more and more. And that's what they ask for. So we're always sending books as much as we can to the libraries and to the individuals, because they love Srila Prabhupada's books, and they get so much enthusiasm, so much spiritual knowledge and strength from Prabhupada's books, that more than anything else, because we also do programs in some cases in jails, and we also write letters, but it's Prabhupada's books that have made the difference. So this one young man, he was there during the lockdown, during the COVID virus time, and most of the jail members came down with COVID, including himself. Now the jail wasn't going to do anything to help them, and didn't want to be bothered with it, because, you know, if they can reduce the jail population, that makes it easier for them, you know. So that's how they think. It's quite horrible in many jails. So he had no recourse, so all he did was go into his cell and chant. And he chanted and chanted and chanted and prayed and chanted. I mean, he really prayed and chanted, the way he describes it. And after a week, he was completely cured. No medicine, no treatment, no association, just the holy name. He had that faith that there's nowhere to go except Krishna. And because he had that faith and he prayed in that way, the holy name transformed him, and he was complete. His health was perfectly returned. No medicine, nothing. So you can see that here is, when people get into that type of environment, They don't have any association unless they can make another inmate a devotee. Otherwise, they're struggling on their own. And it's only Prabhupada's books and the holy name that keeps them connected. And so many of them chant like 64 rounds, 32 rounds a day. And yeah, their life is like that. There was one other. This is the most amazing story. I can't tell you the country that this happened in. It was in somewhere in Asia, because we're not allowed to preach in that country. So, but devotees decided to become the, what they call the priest in the jail, the Hindu priest. So they had an opening for a Hindu chaplain. So this devotee, ISKCON devotee, he applied and got the part. So now he's going to teach Krishna consciousness in jail. We didn't have any temples anywhere because the country is really restrictive, you know. If you go into that country wearing a dhoti, they turn you around immediately. You're back out the same day you come in. So he went, and then he asked the jailers, is there anybody here that weekend that is, you know, the Hindu culture, religion, that, you know, you can send them? We have regular meetings with some inmates. And they said, yes, there's one young man, he's on death row. He's got about two weeks to live, and then he'll be executed. So they sent him, he came, and then we were giving Bhagavad Gita lessons. So he was coming to the lessons. And before then, he had an attitude like, I'm being, you know, victimized, I didn't do what they said I'm doing, you know, this is unfair. He was complaining. His parents would come, and he would complain to them. And he had a bad attitude towards everything, because he was feeling that he actually been victimized. And then after coming to the classes and reading Bhagavad Gita and, you know, interacting with the chaplain and others, he changed. He said, yes, I did it. He told the truth at that point. That's what, just by being exposed to Prabhupada's books, he felt that, no, I should be honest about it. And he became really absorbed in learning Bhagavad Gita, and he wouldn't let Bhagavad Gita out of his hand. He kept it with him all day, and he would sleep with it at night. So then the 2 weeks were up, and it was time for him to meet his, you know, destiny. So the jailers were walking him along, but he asked them, he said, I want to keep Bhagavad Gita with me when you execute me, so because I want to be a devotee in my next life. And they said, yeah, sure, no problem. So he had the Bhagavad Gita, and they're walking him to that place where they perform the execution. And he's passing many of the cells with other inmates. And he's saying, goodbye, I'm going to be a devotee of Krishna in my next life. And he's kind of waving to them, you know. And it's like, the jailers are like confused. Nobody does that. You know? Like, you know, usually they have to drag the guy, and he's fighting to go that way. You know, it's just the way it is. But he was just, you know, walking along, holding his Gita, saying, I'm going to be a devotee of Krishna in my next life. And then, of course, he met his destiny. And then they came back to the devotees. They said, what did you do to him? You know, we never saw that before. I think some of them start coming to our classes after that. So yeah, this is the power of Krishna consciousness. It's transformed. I think the devotees know that. But in such a horrible environment, we can say that with emphasis, that, and being in jail is not so easy, because it's very abusive, and there's drugs there, and you know, you can always be attacked by other inmates, and they try to, you know, molest you also. Jails are really horrible, especially in the United States. So all they have is these devotees. They're trying to become devotees, at least. All they have is the association of Srila Prabhupada's books and the holy name, many of them. And sometimes there's a little group, just like in one city in Virginia, I think it was, it's Richmond, Virginia. We have a wonderful group of devotees there. They meet regularly, and they have their own little room where they have deities also. They have many more of these porcelain deities we can buy in the gift shop, like Ganesh, Radha Krishna, Gaur Nitai, and
inside the jail.
Inside the jail, yeah. Wow. Yeah. The jail is a little bit more liberal. Some jails are, state jails are really heavy, but government jails, or what you say, federal jails, they're a little bit less restrictive like that. It depends. There's all kinds of different levels of jails when people get more or less restrictions and so on. It's like that. There was one story that I wanted to tell which was really interesting. I forgot it. Anyway, so and we're, as temple president mentioned, we have Bhakti Lata here. She's amazing. She's dedicated her whole life to this service. And she's sending out books practically every day to people in jails all around the United States. And, because of Prabhupada's books, there's actually a growing little group of inmates who are actually becoming Krishna conscious. And many of them are in there for life. They'll never leave. And then, in one sense, that's good, because we've seen, and I have that experience, that many times, although they practice Krishna consciousness, sometimes when they get out, the material energy again starts to work on them. Because they have this mindset when they're in jail, that's even before they meet the devotees or the books, that I'm going to make up for lost time when I get out. And they have all their plans. So now after becoming the devotee, their plan sort of changes a little bit. But it doesn't completely go away. So they have this still element of making up for lost time. So we see that sometimes when they leave the jail, they go back to material life. They don't become, they don't come back to jails again, because most inmates, and this is a statistic, go back to jail after release. It's up to about 75%. They call it, what is that called? Residual, or I forgot what the word terminology is, where they actually return, because jails are not reformatory places. They're just places of punishment, which is completely contrary to the idea of helping a person who needs reformation. They should be given education, spiritual education, guidance, and really not punishment. Being in jail itself is a type of punishment. It is a punishment. But inside it's so bad that actually, there's abuse. Just like many times when there's fights breaking out in jail, and happens all the time, the guards don't do anything. They wait till they beat each other, and then they come. And they just, this is the way it is. So and that's most jails, it's like that. I preach also in jails in Europe. In Europe, it's quite different. The jails are much more, organized in a more human culture. There's hardly any fights in the jails, and usually the jailers, they usually make friends with you. So the European mood is a lot different. And when we go in jails, we can do programs in jails. We have kirtans, we distribute books, and sometimes we even bring in, not prasadam, but we bring in fruit, which is actually prasadam, whole fruit, and we distribute it there. So preaching in jails in Europe is a whole different thing. And in the country of Croatia, where I started to preach in Europe, every jail in Croatia has all of Prabhupada's books. Because we met one person who has a political position in the country. He became favorable. Because of him, he allowed Prabhupada's books to go to every jail in Croatia. So that was, that's good. And there's places around the world. We're preaching a lot in the UK. And they also are very open. Many of these jails are into rehabilitation rather than punishment. So they welcome like spiritual societies to come in. And that's good for, you know, because if they can practice Krishna consciousness, and actually some of them, when they do get out, they actually, the only problem is temples around the world are not so inclined to accept people out of jails into their temple environment. It's just the way it is. And they're still a little rough around the edges. It's just the way it is. It's their behavior is not like, you know, ideal. So when they come out, it becomes hard. So generally, they just visit the temples if they can. There was one young man that I was preaching to, and he got out, and then he joined the Chicago temple. And he was a nice boy. And then he got married, had a child, and then he started doing prison preaching himself, and he started his own little program of reaching out to his former fellow inmates and giving them their mercy like that. And so it's going on throughout the world, and it's actually spreading more and more. Yeah. So we want to, and bringing in Prabhupada's books is really the way to, you know, open up people's hearts and minds to Krishna consciousness like that. There are many other incidents that we have. I remember I went into one jail, and one of the inmates had some of Prabhupada's, Nisringadev's oil from Mayapur. And he was giving it to us as we were going in. I thought, this is nice. So we're getting some mercy from those we're trying to give mercy to. So that was sweet. Yeah. Well, I went to one women's, we also preach in women's jails. And so, and this was in Croatia. This is an interesting story. So the ladies are giving less restriction than the men. They're allowed to wear their own kind of clothes. There's no prison uniforms for them. So they can wear whatever they want to wear. Of course, they don't dress up. But they wear ordinary clothes. So we were giving one program there, and I was talking about the Bhagavad Gita and giving some talk on the Bhagavad Gita. And one lady, she just jumped up from her seat and ran out of the class. I think, I guess I said something wrong. So then she came back, and she had this Bhagavad Gita in her hand that had a few little black spots all over it. And then she told the story. She said, I was in my apartment one day, and these two young men came to my apartment, and they sold me this book. And I didn't know what it was, but they were so nice. So I took the book, and I put it on my shelf. And then about a little while later after that, my apartment got caught on fire, and everything in my apartment got destroyed except this book. Wow. And it had a few little black spots on it, but it was completely in good condition. So she could realize this book is something, you know, extraordinary. So, yeah, that's, Prabhupada's books are transcendental. This is an off-the-cuff story, but I'll just tell it. It's not about prison preaching. There was one real macho guy in Australia. He was known for his strength. So the devotees were out distributing books, and somehow they came across this gentleman, and they handed him a book. And he says, you know what I do with those books? I tear them up. I just rip them in half. So they gave him, what was it, Science of Self-Realization. It's a thick paperback book. They said, okay, give it a try. And he took it, couldn't rip it.
Really?
Couldn't do it. He was trying his, well, he's, you know, this guy, I mean, a book like that would have been easy for him because he's been, you know, he's famous for ripping up big books, you know. He couldn't do it. So he became so amazed that he actually bought the book. You know? This book is, what kind of book is this? He said, well, it's spiritual, therefore, and that's why it's like that. So, yeah, Prabhupada's books are transcendental in many different ways. Yeah, so there are, and it's a growing program for preaching, trying to reach these people, because many of them have lost contact with the outside world, and even their friends, former friends and relatives, sometimes have abandoned them. And sometimes, even when a man goes in jail, his wife, after some time, she looks for another partner, and so they lose their family while they're in jail, a lot of times. So, but when they get a letter from a devotee or they receive a book, they feel so happy. It's like it makes their day just to get a letter. So, because really they have no, many of them are just struggling just to somehow endure the time that they have to stay in jail. So, yeah. So it's a real form of compassionate preaching. We have to, and when we do go into jails and give programs, just like when you give a class, like in the temple, or if you're out there giving preaching classes to people in general, everybody wants you to give the best class. They're all on your side. If you're the speaker, they're all thinking, let's hear something, you know. They're all there. But when you go into jails, they test you. They want to know what you got and whether it's worth it, and they challenge you. And sometimes they will argue with you, sometimes they will, you know, reject everything you say. So we get that in these groups. That's mostly in Europe when we go. We get challenged a lot there. And then we find ourselves in the debate many times. Of course, we win the debate, but they don't always accept that. So, the point I'm making that prison audiences are not always like favorable to what you're going to give them. They want to see what it is. They want to check you out. They want to challenge you. They want to see, you know. So they come on in a challenging way many times. And maybe they read something about something spiritual, and we say something, they challenge that. So that's a different type of audience. So it's a little tough from that perspective. But when they read Prabhupada's books, it becomes a different experience. So, it's preaching in jails. It's not easy, but it... If you can make one person, you know, a devotee, and many have actually come forward and taken initiation. Not many, but we can say maybe 100 or so over, you know, throughout the whole world. And that's not many, because I think we must have reached thousands and thousands of inmates with Srila Prabhupada's books. And many of them are inside. There are many, what we say, unknown devotees who are reading Prabhupada's books, who are chanting the holy names of the Lord, who are actually dedicating their life to this philosophy, although they can't really, but they don't have that association with devotees. And that's a big factor in making that leap towards Krishna consciousness in a big way. They have to fight their environment like that. But In other cases, because the atmosphere is so hostile and so contrary to everything, sometimes they just absorb themselves. There's one young man. I'm preaching to him now. He's in a jail in South Carolina. When he was 5 years old, he was walking in the airport in Germany, and he saw the devotees. He was with his parents, and the devotees were doing kirtan in the airport. And he broke loose from his parents and started running towards the devotees. He was just a five-year-old boy, and he was really attracted to these people. Of course, his parents came and grabbed him and brought him back. But he always remembered that incident throughout his whole life. And then he grew up a very, very strict Christian. His parents were of that nature, and they pushed him in that direction. So he became very strict. Then he got involved, unfortunately, with a situation which was self-defense on his part. But because it was a police officer stopped him and his girlfriend on the highway, and then he tried to rape his girlfriend. And so he tried to fight back against the police officer, and the girl had a gun with him, and she gave it to him, and he killed the police officer in self-defense. And because it was a police officer, they wanted to push this whole thing under the rug. So he got caught charged with manslaughter and had to go to jail. In other words, he would have been out by now because it was self-defense. But because of the situation of a police officer, and the police officer was, they didn't want to ruin the name of the, you know, that particular group of policemen by saying this police officer was there. So they hid the whole truth, and he's still in jail because of that. And today, of course, when he was in jail, he was practicing his Christianity really seriously. But then somehow he got sidetracked to the atmosphere in jail and started watching movies and started getting into all kinds of, you know, sinful activities. And then at one point he became very depressed. I mean, extremely depressed. He writes this to me, and he was on the verge. He's planning to commit suicide. The plan was there, he was going to do it. Somehow, Prabhupada's book came to another inmate in jail, was Coming Back. It was the book Coming Back. And his friend gave it to him and said, read this, this is an interesting book. When he read that book, he completely changed his mind. And in the back of the book, there was a little card where you could contact devotees, and he started to contact. He changed his whole life simply by reading that one book. He gave up his idea for suicide, and then started chanting really seriously, and started to preach in jail. Now he's a preacher. He's got a group of other inmates there. He chants 32 rounds a day, and he's helping other inmates to become Krishna conscious. Just from that one book, Coming Back. Prabhupada said, our books are time bombs. They'll go off in due course of time. So these are an example of how, I mean, Prabhupada's books are really the foundation. There was one man, he also had an experience. He went into the library, he said, I'm going to read some books. So he went into the library, and he was looking for some adventurous book. And so he found this book that had a cover on it, and it was like a Western. So when he opened up the book, it wasn't a Western, it was the Bhagavad Gita with a Western cover on it. Somebody switched the covers around. And then he thought, what is this? But then he thought, all right, let me read it. He read the Bhagavad Gita and he got interested. And he started, of course, in that Bhagavad Gita, there was also a connection with some books. We put cards in it so they can contact devotees and get more books. So then he came and actually started, you know, his whole life was changed and started practicing Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So these are, yeah, so Krishna's mercy, some of these, yeah. We were preaching in India too, and we had many experiences. It was one person, He was murder for hire. In India, he was from South India. In India, they have, if you don't like your political opponent, and he's more powerful than you, you can hire somebody to kill your opponent. And this goes on, I guess you know this. Huh? And so, he was murder for hire. So on the eighth, when the eighth person he killed, now he wound up in jail. So now he's in jail. And the devotees were also preaching in that area. There was a doctor. She was coming into the jail and doing some philanthropical work by teaching just basic principles of humanity and civility and aesthetic values. But then she hid that as a covering for her. She was a devotee, and then she started preaching Krishna consciousness undercover. And gradually he started coming to her classes, and then he became really interested, and he changed his whole life, started to chant 64 rounds following Ekadasi, and he was still tough, and he was forcing his fellow prisoners, you got to chant, I'm going to, you know. And that was in India, Tamil Nadu. And then after so many years, he got out, and he went to court, and he was cleared of all of the murders. He got the sentence of innocent. He didn't do it. He did. But Krishna said, "All right, you did nice service, though. I'll give you a chance." So he went out, and then he started visiting the temple, and he was actually—he's a devotee today, somewhere in South India. But he was—he was making his fellow inmates. Of course, we don't use that method, but sometimes we want to, So that's these, so you get some really amazing transformations of people simply by Prabhupada's books. And I preached in India also. I went to a few jails in India. India's good. They want to bring people in and help the inmates to grow in a better way. America's tough, and the jails here are really tough, because a lot of them are controlled by the Christian menace, the Christian chaplains, and they're a little prejudiced against other traditions. But sometimes you find some that are favorable and they allow us to come in, but a lot of times they block us because they don't want to allow the Hare Krishnas to come in. Because they think we're just not, who, from their perspective, they think we're some kind of, invented group of people. So that's tough, and there's a lot of that in America. But still, sometimes we get the books in through the library. We contact the librarians and say, "Would you like a set of books about Vedic culture and the history of the ancient Indian civilization and its culture, its antiquity, its values, its spiritual, practice." And many of the librarians, they're interested in getting new books, so they take our books. So I did two books. One is called Holy Jail, and that was the first one. And we have a second book out. It's called Forbidden Voices. And Forbidden Voices is about the inmates from the inmates. They speak about their own realizations. They write poetry, artwork. You just see some of the artwork they do. Amazing. Amazing artwork. Stuff you could put on the walls, some of them. It's really quite good. And they're very creative in the way they do. And they express themselves through poetry, through artwork. And then we also ask them to write something about Srila Prabhupada. And they'll write beautiful, beautiful expressions of how much they've been transformed by Srila Prabhupada's books. and how Prabhupada changed their whole life like that. Okay, I think we're running close to the hour. If anyone would like to...
I have a question.
Yeah.
In the purport, there's a... So there's a particular demigod for particular senses controlling. And then there is a sense object. So it's not so much relevant to the devotees, but sometime it comes, like before you die you can donate your organs. I just want to hear from your understanding, like whether it is appropriate or not. Because it is not belong, according to Bhagavatam, it not belongs to me.
Hmm.
But then how does it really unfold?
You want my opinion?
Yes.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
Because I don't know where it's going. It could be gone to somebody who is in sense.
Yeah, that's the point. You hit on the point. You might be increasing somebody's criminal activity. So, I don't see any reason why we should enter into that type of charity. But if devotees want to do it, I can't say, well, you know, you shouldn't, but the consequences may not always be good. You know, you could, those organs could, you know, prolong the life of a serial killer or something. Because it's a big business. It's a very big business. And not only do they get voluntary donations of organs, there is a whole criminal activity where they capture people, put them under some chloroform, and then while they're unconscious, they cut them open and take some organs out, sew them back up, and then they're missing one of their kidneys, or part of their liver. Yeah, that's a huge racket in some places in the world. So. And then they get $10,000, $20,000 for, you know, an organ, even more. So I don't think something that devotees... I'm kind of neutral, but I just don't like the idea. Yes?
Thank you for the wonderful presentation, Maharaj. I have one little story and a question. So, it's regarding this intimidating biker. So one devotee told me he was in California, and this big Harley pulled up with this huge guy, this big biker, and he came up to him, stopped his motorcycle right in front of him, and in his heavy voice he said, "Hey, you." And he started taking his shirt off. So this devotee was very scared. So he took his jacket, his riding jacket off, then he took off his other shirt. And he showed him, and his chest has a huge tattoo of Lord Nrisimhadev, and it's another one on his back. And he offered obeisance to him. Then he opened his pocket and showed him his japa bag. He said, "Hare Krishna, nice to see you." So, Maharaj, earlier in your class,
Lord Chaitanya is very merciful. Jagaya Mare got the benefit also. Yeah.
So, earlier in your class, Maharaj, you gave that story of Sanatana Goswami and the mosquitoes. So, it's only when that he threatened to leave that Lord Shiva came forward to offer that protection.
Right.
So in the Bhagavatam, there are many cases we find like that. You know, there are many cases in Vedic history that only when like there is a threat, then that personality come forward. Like for example, Lord Ramachandra is only when he threatened the ocean that the ocean personified came and decided to become calm. And there are so many stories. So my question is there a particular reason for that why not do before the threat comes?
Why the mercy comes after the threat?
Okay, Maharaj, you can say it like that.
Is that the way it is?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think anybody can do that. I mean, Lord Ram is one person, and Sanatana Goswami obviously is, you know, he's a Mahabhagavat, he's a pure devotee. But if I tried that, you know, nothing would happen. So yeah, I think it's the personality behind it. And Shiva wanted to continue to have that Sanatana Goswami to be there, because he was happy, he was right near his, for his Chakaleshwar Mahadev temple. So that's, I think that's the prerogative of the great souls, if they want to show mercy in that way. But I don't think you get, there's a formula for that. It doesn't sound like you could formalize that. If the great souls want to show that mercy, then they can do that. Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Any of the ladies have questions? Yes.
I have to give a thank you. That was a lot of fun listening to your class. It was wonderful. I got to give a shout out to my younger brother, Swaroop, who, while you were talking about who began the ministry, I texted him and I got a text back. And he said, some people's memories only go back 30 years or so, 30 years, I guess. I was definitely the first person to organize a prison correspondence program as an offshoot to the mail order and membership program.
He did.
Swaroop, my brother Swaroop. So he did, yeah.
He was the, okay.
And also, thank you. And also, I wanted to say that my husband and I send out the BTGs to the prisoners for Bhakti Lata, and they look forward to those BTGs every other month. They come out every other month. And lately I've noticed that we've been sending them to chaplains. I thought that was interesting.
Good.
And also, I don't know if she's still desperately looking for people, but for a while she was looking for people that wrote well, that would be interested in writing to the prisoners.
Yeah, that's an ongoing program.
Yeah. I wanted to mention that.
Yeah. And, so, anybody who wants to get involved, I just contact Bhakti Lata, right? She's got that program.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you, Maharaj. Beautiful class. And I'd love to be a writer for your prison ministry manager. Anyway, the question is that you mentioned earlier in the class that some of these prisoners, they are blessed with 32 rounds a day, 64 rounds a day. And why? Because, you know, they're really restricted in their activities. But isn't that, like, that's liberated? I mean, someone can chant like that? I mean, can you help me understand? Because here we are, we're out of, we're not in the prison, we struggle with our rounds.
16, yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I don't recommend you want to increase your rounds by going to jail. So I wouldn't suggest you try that. But it will work, obviously. But we might need you out here, I think. So it's not a program for adoption. But the situation is like that. When you find yourself, you know, as we go in our Krishna consciousness, we see when our attempts in our life fail, we take more and more shelter. We usually find ourselves taking more and more shelter. And the holy name is usually the shelter that we look for. And association with devotees too, of course. But it's just natural. As life becomes more restrictive or more oppressive, those who have that mercy, have received that mercy, they'll go closer to Krishna, obviously. And the holy name is the way to do it, usually. So, yeah. So, but we're in jail anyway. We say there's three jails. We're in two of them. One is the material world and the material body. And those inside the iron jail, that's the third one.
Similar to her point, like you were saying, the material world is likened to a jail. It's easy to feel the freedoms here, to feel very free, to feel like we're not in prison. So therefore, it's easy to become distracted. But it seems that those who are actually in a prison cell, when they do take to Krishna consciousness, it's like a spark goes off, and because they really feel like they're in prison, and this really feels like their only shelter. And without us having to go to prison, what lessons have you felt like devotees in general can apply to their life, learning from the inmates?
Don't get distracted, right? there's a little analogy, and it's aligned with the prison. It's a little analogy that there's a wall, and it goes all around the prison, and and in the wall there's an opening, and that opening is a way out. So this person is blind. So he's trying to find that opening, and he's feeling the wall. He's feeling the wall, and he's coming closer to that opening. He's looking for that opening. And as soon as he gets near the opening, a fly comes and lands on him and starts bugging him. And he's chasing the fly away, and he misses the opening. And then he goes around again. So that's material life. That distraction comes. We're looking for that constant connection with devotional service, but then Maya has that way of flying into our life. Of course, if we're fixed in Krishna consciousness, we can see that and not get distracted. But we still have that tendency, because Maya exactly knows where you're weak. That's one of her qualities. She knows your weakness, and she'll always look for that point to attract you or distract you based on your weakness. You might say your spiritual weakness. So therefore, devotee becomes aware, yes, I have a tendency to become distracted because of this or attracted because of this. The devotee guards against that. It's like when you're in a boxing ring, if you're fighting, and you hit the opponent in a certain place, and there's some wound on that opponent, then you look to hit that same place again because it's vulnerable. And the person who is being hit, they try to cover that more because they're more vulnerable in that area. So Maya looks for that spot. So she's very... And she's our friend because she's trying to make us strong. So we become aware of that and become less vulnerable to that type of attraction. Yeah. That's material life. You know, you're going along in devotional service, and it's going on for so many years, and you're, you know, fixed up, and your old girlfriend comes back. How do you go? Do you remember me? Hey! Ah. Oh, no. That's happened. It says that the demigods do that. The demigods, when they see that one devotee's making a lot of progress and enter things, oh no, he's going to take my position. So let me do something. So he sends your old girlfriend or something that's in the past that reawakens your, you know, old life again. That happened to one sannyasi in our movement. He left his wife and his child. The child was 4 years old. He took sannyas and joined. He just joined a movement. Later on, he became a sannyasi. Now he's practicing for 30 years. And after 30 years, his daughter finds him. Hey, Dad, you remember me? And she had a cigarette in her mouth. She came up and she reminded him, and Of course, you know, that was his daughter, so he was nice to her, but at the same time was quite difficult. But he was trying to help her by trying to explain to her the importance of spiritual life. He wasn't distracted, more attracted, but he was inconvenienced by that situation. But it was an opportunity to preach, so he accepted that. But it was difficult, because she was seeing him as her father, and he was seeing her as an object of his preaching, so it was a little different. So these things do happen. Shari.
I'm sure there's a lot of devotees here that have been in jail in Krishna service.
Have been what?
In jail in Krishna service. Oh yeah. Let me see your hands. How many people have been in jail?
I was in
Japan. And some devotees before I went there to serve Srila Prabhupada had misbehaved a little bit. One devotee went into a Rolex shop and asked to see a Rolex, and when the store, you know, clerk showed him the Rolex, the devotee took the Rolex and ran out the door with a saffron dhoti on. Not very smart. So after that, we were not given permission to collect in Japan.
Oh, wow.
We lost our ability to get missionary visas, so to speak. So I came after that, but we kept doing it. We got tourist visa, and we went to Japan. And then the immigration would come sometimes, and because they knew who we were, and if they saw us, they'd come, and at first they'd give you a warning. And then after the warning, if they catch you again, they take you to jail. And then they'll deport you. So I was in Osaka, I do believe, with some other devotees. And I was by myself, and I got caught, and I'd already been warned. So they took me to jail. And there was two other devotees that also went to jail at the same time, so we had association with each other. And we took advantage of this, and we chanted 64 rounds a day. We were chanting, learning Bhagavad Gita slokas, so on and so forth, and we were in jail for 15 days. And it was a very good experience.
15 days, wow.
And Prabhupada was on the planet. Mm. This was like in 1977. So then, we immediately after we got deported to Hawaii. We went to a lawyer. We legally changed our names. We got new passports in our new names, and we were back in Japan. And we were determined. We didn't care, you know. I don't recommend to doing this kind of stuff anymore, but this is kind of special times. So then I was going out, and I got a warning, kept going out, and on Radhastami Day, in 1977, sometime in September, I got caught again. And they put me in jail, and they saw me, and says, "What is this? You're not this person. You have a fake passport. You're going to be in jail for 5 years.
Oh, my God.
So then I just, took my, for the first 18 days, I didn't have any books or anything. I took my copings, and I took the waist strap, and I divided it into four parts. And one part I put back on my waist. And the other three parts I tied knots, and
put the mic up.
Knots and a headbeat.
108 knots in my cloth. And I made japa beads, like that. And I chanted at least 108 rounds every single, there was nothing else to do. There was nothing else to. And we had been in there previously and we had done kirtan, and they knew that we couldn't be in with the other prisoners. They gave me on my own cell, and you know, it was a good experience for me. And this time it lasted 38 days. And after 18 days, I got like a Bhagavad Gita. A Japanese devotee came and brought me, you know. So he was the first prison minister. Not your brother. But anyway, that was, it was I could say it was probably the best time in my Krishna consciousness when I was put in jail for 38 days all by myself. Then I got out of jail, they deported me, and I didn't go to the lawyer and change my name. But I went out in Waikiki, and it was honeymoon season in Japan. So instead of me having to go back to Japan, Krishna arranged for Japan to come to me. The honeymoon couples from Japan were out there, and I was collecting in Hawaii, you know, from them. So anyway, this was just a prison story.
Amazing determination you had.
Now I look back at it, and I consider it to be, you know, kind of like a devotional service in the mode of ignorance.
No, I don't think so.
Well, you don't know how I acted.
I think that's the way devotees were. We were so determined to follow Srila Prabhupada that we found ways to do it.
Yeah, we definitely did.
Prabhupada
Vishta.
Huh?
Prabhupada
Vishta.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada said when you're with cheaters, you have to cheat. So, don't quote me on that. It's already on the tape, I know. Okay. Yes, here comes the other half. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Change of story. Just going back to Pranagovind Prabhu's question about perspective on donating organs. If anyone is interested, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu was asked this question, and he's given a very balanced and nuanced answer about perspective. It's not black or white. It really depends on one's perspective and intention. So you can't say it's right, it's wrong. It really depends on one's motives and how you view it. So it's not this is right or this is wrong. So if anyone's interested, you can go on his website and just look up that question. Very interesting.
Good. Thank you. I've gotten that question about 3 or 4 times in the last 6 months. So yeah, I don't know why, but I guess I'm about heading towards that era. So anyway, thank you for bringing that up. I would like to get an answer, as I know I'll get the question again.
Maharaj, I do have a question. It's a little bit of a tension or a conundrum, because you were mentioning how the statistics say that most prisoners go back into jail. You said like something like 70%.
Yeah, what's called recidivism. It's about 70%.
And how it doesn't work, and reformation is really, and that's the mood of Lord Chaitanya. But then I was thinking also for the governance of any place, country or whatever, the tension between punishment and reformation, justice and mercy. Mercy is, of course, a quality of the Brahmins, and to administer justice is the duty of the Kshatriyas. So, and it's said that, you know, if someone commits a murder, then, of course, they should be executed. I mean, Manu Samhita says that also, that if you kill someone, then you get killed in this life, so then you don't have to suffer in your next life. So just the balance between justice and mercy, punishment and reformation, if you could elaborate on that.
Hmm. Wow. There's one jail in Norway. It's a big jail, and it's on an island, and has no bars, no guards, nothing. And if someone commits a crime, they're taken to this jail, and they teach them different trades there, and they get them to do work, and carpentry, and various types of skills, and they can walk around the island, they're free, and they have no restriction. They live in pretty much an ordinary life, but they can't go off the island, that's all. And usually, when their time is up, they go back into the world and they're completely changed. In other words, they don't have any tendency for the crime anymore, because they were treated with a lot of kindness rather than punishment, an opportunity to grow by learning different skills. They were able to do more or less what they wanted within a certain limit. In other words, there was no bars, no guards, nothing. There were people managing it, but it wasn't done in a restrictive way. So that jail, that country has very few people returning to jail. Norway. Yeah. So that's an interesting way of looking at rehabilitation. Rather than punishment, the punishment is the restriction, that's all. But aside from that, nothing more. Okay. Oh, Soma, yes. If anyone feels they have to go for any reason, please, you can leave.
Yeah, we're not in jail.
Okay.
But it's interesting that Srila Prabhupada used to call the people that lived in New Vrindavan the inmates of New Vrindavan.
Yeah.
And of course, you were one for a long time.
Yeah, I was really an inmate.
And for those that don't know, Chandramali Maharaj was a very expert cook. He cooked a lot of the milk sweets, and he actually he pleased Srila Prabhupada very much in 1976 when Srila Prabhupada visited New Vrindavan. I can't remember if it was para or sweet rice.
Para.
Mm-hmm. That got offered to Srila Prabhupada, and when Srila Prabhupada tasted it, he said, "Oh, I haven't tasted para like this in 60 years." And then he ate like an incredible amount of them, too.
Three of them in a row.
Yeah.
Haribo! Chandramali
Swami Maharaj Ki Jai! That's why I'm still here. Special mercy from Prabhupada. I think he was feeling sorry for me, so he gave me some mercy. Yeah, that's what para is. That's what makes para different from burfi is cardamom. Yeah,
cardamom.
Yeah. Burfi is just milk and sugar.
Yeah.
Para is milk, sugar, and cardamom. And on the outside, sometimes you put sugar on it also. Some kind of para. That's a whole nother story. But Soma was right. When we were in New Vrindavan, it wasn't much different than jail. Some of the jails were more better in terms of the facilities.
Yeah, you guys had oat water.
Yeah, I cooked it too. Oat water was one cup of oats to seven cups of water.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's liquid. And that was breakfast, along with rice. And no sweetener. No hot water. We bathe with cold water all year round. Soma, he can testify. That's a whole nother class. devotees are always eager to hear about the good old days. But, you know, but because we were young, you know, as Shari was saying that, you know, when you do something in those days, you have that adventurous. Krishna consciousness was more than just a spiritual practice. It was an adventure. You know, kind of trying to spread Krishna consciousness or just doing your service. So we accepted all of the restrictions that were given to us without any. And we just did it because this was going to please Prabhupada and this was going to help build New Vrindavan. So we never considered it to be difficult. Although, when you look back on it, it was. Yeah. We had lunch when I first joined was chapatis with no ghee, no salt, rice with no salt, and something they called dal, but it wasn't. It was pea beans, split pea beans, which made a green pea soup, that's all. And that was lunch, no vegetables. Very well.
Wow. And in the spring, we would have pokeweed.
Huh?
In the spring, we would have pokeweed.
Well, that was the opulence that entered into later. Pokeweed was something that looks like asparagus. It's a lot bigger, but it has the same shape as asparagus. And it was growing wild in the woods, so devotees would go out and pick it and bring it. And we'd cook it and make sabjis out of it, make chutneys out of it. So for a while we were eating only pokeweed. It was tasty, but you know, you want a little variety when you eat, you know. So it was like that. Okay, I don't want to, you know, keep devotees from other activities. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Radha Shyam Sundar ji ki jai.